I want to thank the OU for inviting me once again to address its members at this Yom Shekulo Torah. I did file a complaint last year, and I'll file the same complaint. I hashkafically do not walk into this building, being an avid Yankees fan, and this goes against everything in my sports hashkafa. But again, our rabbis tell us that we have to put our will on the side for the greater good, in this case, Talmud Torah. So I have overcame a great challenge again today to be here. It is not easy. I appreciate that you can relate. I was asked to speak about a very important topic. Sephardim, which I am proudly one, and Ashkenazim, some of my best friends are Ashkenazim, and they're living together in Eretz Yisrael, in the land of Israel, in the modern day, living with their differences. And by all means, there are differences. So how do you run a country with two different diverse people that have different laws and different customs, and somehow to try to unify them, if that is possible? But before I talk about what's going on today, it's important for us to remind ourselves of the importance of custom. Again, if you don't believe in the importance of custom, then none of this means anything. So then just do what you want, and who cares? But if you believe that custom has value and minhag is something to be taken seriously, as our rabbis tell us, that the word minhag, if you spell it backwards, it spells the word gehinam, which comes and tells us that, you know, those that are, you know, flippant in just discarding Jewish custom, so then the reverse of that word might be their fate. As a matter of fact, there was a great rabbi of the Ashkenazim, chief rabbi of Krakow. His name was Rav Moshe Isserlish. He wrote a gloss on the Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch was written by our rabbi, Rabbi Yosef Karo. We call him Maran, our rabbi. And we refer to the Rama as Muram. Muram is their rabbi. Now, it's not chas v'shalom disrespectful. It's just so we have a point of reference who we're talking about, Maran and Muram. Or we just call him the Rama or the Hagaha. And in his glosses, in one of his laws, he writes the following. He's talking about a certain custom that the Ashkenazim adopted. And he says, V'chen ha-minhag. That indeed is the minhag. V'en l'shanot. And don't change it. And I saw one of the commentaries once point out, what was the Rama inferring when he added those two words, en l'shanot, don't change it? Was somebody in his time changing customs, that the Rama had to give him a stern rebuke and said, hey, listen, this is the way we do it, and don't change it? Well, they explained it historically according to a story that happened to the Rama himself. He was a young man. He became the chief rabbi of Krakow. He only lived to 33 years old. It's an amazing accomplishment that a rabbi was able to do what he did and make such an impact, and he passed away in his early 30s. He's buried right behind the synagogue in Krakow, where he prayed. And when he became the chief rabbi, his first day on the job, after Alinu L'Shabayach, after the prayers, the Shamosh, the sexton of the yeshiva of the synagogue, got up, and he started to read a list of names of men. And after each name, the congregation said, Mazal Tov, B'siman Tov, congratulations. And then he read the next name, B'siman Tov, Mazal Tov. So the rabbi, who was, his first day on the job, never saw such a custom like this. So he asked the Shamosh, what is so special about the names that you're reading on these lists? He said, well, these are the men that their wives went to the mikveh last night. So the Rama says, what type of custom is this here? You announce their names and everybody says Mazal Tov and Misiman Tov. I mean, this is immoral. The law says that the mikveh is something that's quite private, And the law says we're not even supposed to tell anybody when we're going and if we're going. It has to be done clandestinely. It has to be done under the radar. And here you have a custom in Krakow where you get up and you announce the fellow's name and Bipumbi and in a public forum. And everybody else reacts with Mazal Tov. The Rama says, well, I'm the new rabbi. And as of today, this custom is nullified. Batel umbutal, it has no credence. The rabbi said. A few days later, a member of the congregation who was away, come back from a trip, he comes into the synagogue and he's waiting for the announcement. Alinu l'shabeach comes and goes, there's no announcement, there's no recognition. So he goes up to the shamosh, he says, hey, listen, you know, what happened? How come you didn't make the announcement about the mikveh? My wife went last night to the mikveh, and this is the custom. So he said, listen, let me tell you two things. You're away. We have a new rabbi in town. And the rabbi, for whatever reason, nullified and he abolished that custom. So we don't do that anymore. And anyway, I have the list. Your wife did not go to the mikveh last night. So he says, what are you talking about? So right away, they go to the Rama and they do an investigation. And they find out that she actually didn't go to the mikveh. You know, in those days in Krakow, they didn't have heated mikvahot. It's a freezing cold mikveh. It's a big mesirut nefesh to go to the mikveh. So she told the husband, yeah, I'm going to go now. And she went out and she just put water on her head. And then she came back and she said, yeah, I'm good. So at that point, the Rama stood up and he started to cry and he ripped his clothes. He made kiri'ah. And he said, now I understand the custom. The custom was in order to guarantee that the ladies would go to the mikveh. If they knew that their names were going to be announced the next day and that it's going to be a public knowledge, they would not be able to circumvent it. But you see, now that we stopped the minhag, there's no insurance against this. And I stopped this minhag and it's my fault. As I am the rabbi of Krakow, the minhag is reinstituted. And he would write in his glossings, V'chen ha-minhag ve'en l'shanot. He was rebuking himself because he was the one that changed the minhag. So therefore, even the strangest of customs, even though we say, you know, well, where did it come from? But again, if as long as we could trace it and find an origin, like the rabbis say, a lot of the minhagim, their sources are in the highest mountain. Yesodotam b'harere kodesh. Their origins are in the holiest of mountains. So therefore, we're very overprotective, rightfully so, of our customs. And our policy would be as well in the Shanot. Now, of course, not every custom is a good custom. There was a rabbi in the synagogue once, his first day on the job, and he got up after the Sefer Torah to make the Misha Berach. And as he's making the Misha Berach, the president of the congregation gets up and says, oh, excuse me, rabbi, we don't say this Misha Berach in the synagogue. It's not our custom. It's okay. So he desists. The vice president gets up and says, we do say it. And now he's in a dilemma. He has, you know, the two committee members telling him conflicting reports. So he turns to the right side. The treasurer says, we don't say it. The secretary says, we say it. And now half the shul is screaming, we say it. And the other shul is saying, we don't say it. There's a big fight that breaks out. Now the rabbi's in a big dilemma. He doesn't know what to do. So he's a pikeah. He's a bright guy, clever guy. He says, I have a simple idea. Let me turn to the oldest man in the congregation. Clearly, he's been around the longest. He'll know the custom. In the meantime, the shul is in fire. It's inflamed. Everybody's yelling at each other. So he turns to the old man. He says, you're the oldest man here. Clearly, you have a tradition in your pocket. What is the tradition regarding this Misha Berach? And he points to everybody and says, this is the tradition. Which means we fight it out every year for 15 minutes. We yell at each other. And then we pray Musaf. This is the custom. Well, obviously, that's not a legitimate custom. Anyway, we begin now a great topic. And it's really, it's a problem that the state of Israel has been grappling with since its inception, even before its inception. The problem is as follows. With the blessing of God and the great miracles, the convergence of the exiles to Eretz Yisrael, something that did not happen for 2,000 years. It's a great thing. In the olden countries, you had the Sephardim in Spain. So nobody had any questions about custom. Everybody was a Sephardi, everybody lived in the same community, and basically everybody did the same thing. The Europeans were living in Ashkenaz or wherever they were in Europe, and basically they had more or less the same tradition. And nobody ever had any questions, you know, how do we live together? Nobody had to live together. Everybody was living in their community, and they were bound by their tradition. Problem is when they came to Eretz Yisrael. So you have Jews from Yemen, and you have Jews from, you know, Europe converging in the same place. You have Jews like my grandparents from Syria, from Aleppo and Damascus. You have Jews from Egypt, from the Middle East, those North African countries. And you have Jews from Hungary and Jews from Poland. Clearly, everybody's coming with a different way of looking at it. Everybody's coming with a different interpretation. And now they're all together in a country. And now, the building blocks of a country is you have to build it according to a certain unified system. You cannot have, you know, everybody just doing what they want to do, especially in certain things that need to be run by government. For example, let's talk about marriage. Marriage, government has its hand in marriage. You need a marriage license. You need certain legal documents. So the government is going to have a say now. Now, if in marriage you're going to have different opinions of what's considered a legal marriage, what's considered a legal marriage, so you can have two standards in a country, it's going to be very hard to manage it. So the great rabbi, one of the early rabbis in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Kook, who needs no introduction, in 1921, he was, of course, the big advocate in the establishment of the chief rabbinate of Israel. The chief rabbinate, in those opinions that believed that the chief rabbinate was a great institution, so they believed that we need to create a rabbinate. It will be made up of, you know, the great rabbis of the generation. We'll pick one or two, and they will decide the rule for the nation. Not Sephardi, not Ashkenazi, but a unified law. And since the majority of the people at the time were Ashkenazi, and they were running the show, especially in the Rabbanut, so therefore, there was clearly a lot of, pressure to follow the Ashkenaz way of doing things. And even the great Sephardic rabbis were at that point underneath them, and therefore they acquiesced to forego age-old traditions for the sake of unifying the nation. Now, I just want to read you two statements, one from Rav Kook, so you know his view on how he looked at, you know, establishing a unified nation, and then of one of the chief rabbis of the Sephardim, Rabbi Ben Sion Hai Uziel. Rav Kook makes his statement in 1921 when he says, I'll read it in Hebrew and explain, of course. Ve'anachnu nikra'im akshav libnot et binyan ha'umah. We are being called upon ourselves to build a nation. Lintoa niti'at hayim shetisa perot, to plant a tree of life that will produce fruit. Lehaya amenu, for the welfare of our nation, lidorot, for the future generations. Behayenu ha'le'umiyim, HaHadashim Be'eretz Yisrael, for a new nationalistic existence in the land of Israel. Yelanu Bevadai, certainly, Lefamim, sometimes, Sorech Gadol, a great necessity, Letaken Takanot Gedolot. We're going to have to establish great Takanot, great establishments. Shekol Zeman Shetiyena Muskamot Merov Chachmei Yisrael. We're going to have to follow majority. As long as we can get the majority of the scholars of Israel to agree, and it'll be accepted al kol kahal, yehiyeh lahem koach shel din Torah. It'll have the credence of Torah law. That's what they believed. They believed that, listen, you need one law. And therefore, when you get the biggest rabbis of Israel together, and at the time, majority of them were Ashkenazim, and we're going to decide the way the policy should be, and since we're the biggest rabbis of Israel, and we've been chosen by the people to lead, therefore our rulings have a status of Din Torah. And there was no pushback. As a matter of fact, as I said, Rabbi Ben Sion Hai Uziel, who was the chief rabbi of the Sephardim at the time, this is his reaction, where he says, Davar echad ani yachod etzayen. I want to make one point. This was in a speech that he made. He says, my will, Ritzoni HaKabir, my great will is, le'acherd et kar'e ha-galut. I want to fix the tear of the exiles. Shel kehilot ve'edot nefnadot. The differences of different congregations, Sephardim, Ashkenazim, Temanim. And then he writes, lo kashe tehye li avodazu. It won't be difficult for me. Ki halo, because after all, ha'ahdut hi beteba havayatenu. In our DNA, the Jewish people are a nation that wants to be united. So we have an affinity to unity. When we stood at Har Sinai, it says, bele behad ki ish ehad. So therefore, it won't be easy to unite a people that by nature wants to be united. He says, only the exiles have caused us to be scattered. And then he comes along and he says, en shum siba lamshich et pirud agalut. There's no reason to continue this scattering of the exiles. Lekehilot murhabot v'safot shonot, aval kehila achat te'ahed otanu. It's the time that one community should prevail. So he only gave, Rav Kook in his talk, a haskama that, listen, us Sephardim are not going to bother this system. We're going to, subjugate ourselves to whatever you tell us to do. And if you tell us that's what we're doing in Eretz Yisrael, even though we did it for 1,000 years differently, so be it, in the name of unity. That was how it started. That's the way it clearly didn't end that way, but that's the way it started. It sounds like a very nice thing, especially if you're an Ashkenazi, it's a great thing. They're just basically saying, listen, our law is the law, and the Sephardim they waved the white flag already. They said, listen, we're not going to bother anybody because we're not in the majority. We don't have the influence that the Ashkenazim have. Therefore, so be it. And for the sake of Ahdut Klal Yisrael, one law, and then let's move on. And that's until certain events happen. The famous event in Petah Tikva, the Bet Din in Petah Tikva. It's in the 1960s, end of the 1950s, 1960s. You need a little halachic background to know the story, which I'll provide to you. The law of Yibum. You have a man that's married, and he passes away. He doesn't have any children. So the Torah says that his brother is bound by Jewish law and connected to his sister-in-law. That connection can manifest itself in one of two ways. Either he can consummate a marriage with her, which is called Yibum, and therefore they are considered married, and that is considered his obligation from the Torah. However, under circumstances where she refuses or he refuses, he cannot just walk away. He must sever that connection by performing a ceremony called Halitza. And of course, the Gemara Yibamot, which is this big, goes through all the laws of Yibum and Halitza. This law, by the way, still applies Bizman Azeh. It's not a law on the times of the temple. The law applies today. The question is, the Mishnah had a very definitive opinion when it said that today we do not do Yibum. We do not do Yibum. And the Gemara, the Mishnah understood, because Yibum has to be made L'shem Shamayim. And if the people are going to make the Yibum for ulterior motives that are not purely L'shem Shamayim, the Yibum is invalid. And today, who's L'shem Shamayim? Therefore, we don't have Yibum. Halitza is the only option. However, in the Talmud, the later rabbis, as brought down in that Gemara, say that, no, we don't subscribe to that opinion that Yibum must be done L'shem Shamayim. The Pasuk says, Yibama Yabo Alav, that the Yibama should, the Yavam, the man should fulfill his obligation in any which way. And therefore, since you don't have to be L'shem Shamayim, just fulfill the mitzvah, so therefore Yibum is valid. The rabbis of the Ashkenazim, the Rama, he took the approach of the Mishnah that there's no Yibum today. Today, Yibum is forbidden, and the only option is Halitza. Against it was Maimonides, and of course his rabbi, the Rif, which is the two pillars of the Sephardim. And Maran, our rabbi in Shulchan Aruch, he said that we are of the approach that Yibum could be fulfilled even Bizman Azeh. So here's a perfect example of, now you have a tremendous argument between two communities, is this marriage called Yibum legal or is it illegal? You ask the Ashkenaz rabbis, they say this is an illegal marriage, it's forbidden from the Mishnah. You ask the Sephardi rabbis, they said, what are you talking about? We've been making Yibum for 2,000 years since the Hatimat Talmud. Shulchan Aruch says it's legal. Now again, that question didn't matter when you had Jews living in Spain and you had Jews living in Hungary, because the Jews in Spain didn't care what they were doing over there, nor did they care what they were doing over there. But now they come to Israel. So, chief rabbi at the time is Rabbi Herzog. Rabbi Herzog, great rabbi, Gaon, I mean, nothing to talk. It's not for me to quantify these great rabbis, but everybody knows Rabbi Herzog was considered, Gaon Shebe Gaonim. He's the chief rabbi simultaneously with Rabbi Uziel. We know already Rabbi Uziel's, view when it comes to unity in Eretz Yisrael. So they write the following declaration. The following declaration was written. Berov kehilot Yisrael, and the majority of communities in Israel, v'chen bekehilot ha-Ashkenazim, as well as the Ashkenazim, kibelu alehem lehalacha, they have accepted upon themselves the halacha, shemitzvat halitza kodemet lemitzvat yibum, that halitza comes first, and even if both of them want to make yibum, en manihim otali yabim, we don't allow yibum. Ubiyot shebizmanenu barur hadavar, and today it's clear, they write, sherov hayibamim enam leshem shamayim, that today the people do not do these mitzvot leshem shamayim. And therefore, he says, "Umishum darkei shalom ve'ahdut, in the name of peace and in the name of unity, b'medinat Yisrael, shelo tiyeh Torah k'shtei Torot, so we don't have disparity, like we'll have two different laws. Hinenu gozrim." Amazing story. We are making a gezerah. Gezerah is a decree al toshavei Eretz Yisrael, on all the dwellers of this land. Those that haven't come yet, but those that are on the way, and will settle me'ata from here on in, le'esor alehem mitzvat yibum legamre. Yibum in this land is forbidden. Behayavim, and they are obligated lachlotz. So there you go. The chief rabbinate in that one, edict, they said, listen, we can't follow both laws. We're trying to start a country. It'll be too confusing that you have some people that are legalizing a marriage and then you have another group that's saying it's contraband. So therefore, in the name of unity and peace, both chief rabbis, Herzog and Rabbi Uziel, signed the document. That's the law. Let it be signed and let it be so it is. Now we get to Petach Tikva. It all changes in Petach Tikva, the Bet Din in Petach Tikva. And this is one of the rabbis that obviously had a different view. The head of the Bet Din in Petach Tikva was a rabbi called Hacham Avadia Yosef. And he was not of the view, of kumbaya and everybody has to get along and, forget about tradition and Shulchan Aruch doesn't mean anything and whatever the Ashkenazim tell us to do, that's what we're going to do, and our menhagim are worthless, and for the sake of unity. So a case came to him of a Timani guy, and he had a brother that passed away, and he comes along and says, listen, we want to do Yibum. The girl, the daughter, the sister-in-law wants to make Yibum. The Timani guy wants to make Yibum. And they have this edict now that's telling them, in Israel, it's forbidden. Chaim Avadia would go on to write one of the longest responsa, showing the historical tradition of the Sefer Adim. And, of course, he starts to say, how can a rabbi, even if he's a chief rabbi, how can they come along and write that our traditions have no meaning? How do you undo Shulchan Aruch? How do you undo the opinion of Maimonides? And therefore, he, with great battle in that Bet Din, he came along and he asserted that nobody can tell us what to do. Our traditions are just as important as the other traditions, and therefore, I'm the chief rabbi of this Bet Din, and therefore, we're going to legalize this Yibum, is where it starts. And then, in the in his teshuvah. This is very important history because this is where the mahloket begins. You know, you think it's just a mahloket between Sephardim and Ashkenazim. It's really between the Sephardim and the Sephardim. It was a civil war. So he then writes in the teshuvah a stinging rebuke against Rabbi Uziel. He didn't agree with his approach. I quote what he writes in the teshuvah. He writes, "Mitoch rov ahavato le'ahdut ha'uma." Rabbi Uziel has been blinded by the love of his people and the unity. V'hasarat mechitzot. And the rabbi is so interested in removing barriers and partitions. Ha'hevdelim shebena adot, that separate the congregations. And therefore he says, he even went so far, levater al shechitat sefaradit. He goes into another subject that was a big pet peeve of the rabbi. Here's another one. Everybody eats kosher. That's not up for debate. What is up for debate is what makes a piece of meat kosher. How do you define kosher? Could you believe it? The Sephardim have one definition of it, and the Ashkenazim have a different definition of it. Now, the Sephardim, their definition of kosher is that when you slaughter the animal, you have to make certain internal checkings to make sure that all the internal organs are kosher, there's no blemishes. And the most important checking is, of course, the lungs. And when they check the lungs, the Bet Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Karo, Maran, his opinion was very strict. He said the lungs have to be perfectly clean. They cannot have any sinew, or we call them in halakha sirchot. Sometimes there's certain sinews that grow on the lungs. Maran said it has to be, in his words, halak. Halak means smooth. And that was always the custom of the Sephardim. The Shohatim knew that. You know, check the animal, you look at it. If you see a sircha, we don't eat it. It's not halak. Ashkenazim also agree that the lung has to be halak. They don't call it halak, however. They call it glat. Glat means, you know better than me, smooth. However, their definition of smooth is not our definition. Because they said, listen, you know, an animal has a couple of these sirchot on it, but a lot of them you could just pull right off. You know, they come off very easily without damaging the lung. So as long as you can just pull them off without any damaging the lung, that's considered halak. And we say once you start to have to fool around and pull them off, that's not halak. So what the Ashkenazim were calling glat kosher, the Sephardim were saying, it's not kosher. So now we have a big machloket. And now you have one country and now you have two standards of meat. Chaim Avadya alav shalom, he said, listen, kashrut is not something that you could play with. If we have a higher standard, in this case, we have a higher standard. Not in all cases, obviously. In this case, our standard is different. So are we just going to go now and say that for now on Sephardim should do away with an age-old practice of eating a certain standard of meat just because of the sake of the unity? So we said, well, Rabbi Uziel said we should do away with two different slaughterhouses, and therefore we should just do it like the Ashkenazim and forget about everything, and God will understand for the sake of Ahdut, just eat it and finish. Chaim Avadya comes along and says, I totally reject that. No chief rabbinate for the sake of any type of unity can do away with the tradition of an entire community of thousands of people that have been doing it for thousands of years. And then he writes, and especially the great rabbi of Jerusalem, Rav Zvi Pesach Frank, who was a great gaon of the Ashkenazim, Chaim Avadya writes his opinion. He says, Rabbi Frank writes in one of his letters, Ve'af im rabbanim yaskimu libitul ha-shechita, even if the rabbis will agree to do away with the Sephardi shechita, akum ani ve'argen shechita sefaradit birushalayim. I will come and establish a shechita sefaradit in Jerusalem. So obviously Rav Frank was of the opinion that chief rabbinate does not have an authority to now coerce a group of people to do away with their traditions. And this is more than a tradition. This is a halakha. So it wasn't so clear. Not everybody had this opinion of, you know, for the sake of Ahdut, you just, you know, follow one unified approach. And then the rabbi comes along in the Teshuvah and he says, V'kanir'eh. He says, it seems to me, Gam kan b'inyan ha'skama shel isur yibum le'sefaradim. When it came to Rabbi Uziel, forbidding Sefaradim to make yibum, nimshach harav l'shitato. The rabbi got drawn after his approach, me'ahavato le'ahdut ha'uma, from his love of the unification of his nation, v'gedola ahava shemekalkelet ha'tashura. He says, but this love over here sometimes is beyond its borders, and therefore it breaks the protocol. U'be'emet, shahalila lebatel peske rabotenu. God forbid to break our traditions. Mared atrag, you know, sfarad bishvil. And then he writes in italics, hadimyon le'ahdut. He says, anyway, that ahdut that they're seeking is an illusion. He says, at the end of the day, it's two different communities and from two different cultures. And therefore, you know, by trying to, you know, unify them in certain halakhot, it's only an illusion of ahdut. And therefore, Kamavaya is a revolutionist on this, where he believed that there is no place to change Jewish custom. Now, there was for Sephardim, at least. I'll give you another example in the realm of marriage. Kamavaya, many years ago, and by the way, let's fast forward. Today, Sefaradim in Eretz Yisrael, if they opt to make Yibum, the Bet Din will allow them to make Yibum. That law is not unified. Ashkenazim have their Bet Din, and Sefaradim can follow. The chief rabbinate was not able to impose upon the Sefaradim their rules. Hacham Avadya was very, very outspoken on it, and he was able to ban it, or to block it. Another example is the Karaim. The Karaim are a group of Jews. They're Jews. But they have different traditions regarding the oral law, the Talmud. Their definitions are not, not orthodox, not traditional. They're called the Karaim. A lot of the Karaim lived in Egypt. And when the state was found, when the Medina was found, a lot of them moved to Eretz Yisrael. They moved to cities like Ramleh and places like that. And the question was regarding the legality in marrying a Karai family. You have a young girl, and she meets a Karai fellow. He's Jewish. And she comes to the Rabbanut and she says, I need a certificate. And the Rabbanut asks the girl, who are you? My family is Rabinowitz, and my father is so-and-so, and Jewish and all that. And who are you? We are from an old traditional Karait family from Cairo. Karai? The Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Islish, writes in the most clear terminology, HaKaraim Asur Lehitchatem Bam. Vehem safek mamzerim, ve'en mekablim otam im rotzim lachzor. And even if they want to come back and make teshuvah, we cannot accept them. What is the basis of the Ramah's opinion? It's based on the opinion of Tosfot Shantz. Tosfot Shantz said the following. He says, every Karai that you see, you have to suspect that he's a mamzer. I'm not going to explain mamzer in English. You know what that is. Why is a Karai a mamzer? He says, because they believed in marriage. So a Karai marries a Karait, and they followed the laws of Kiddushin. So he gave her a ring, Hare'at Mekudeshet Li, so they're legally married. However, they didn't believe in divorce. Their divorce, their get, was not a traditional get. So therefore, when you had a Karai couple that got a divorce, the divorce is always invalid. Therefore, the lady is considered still married. She's Eshet Ish.
And now when she goes with another man, it's an eshet ish that's still married. Therefore, the children are kara'im. And therefore, this was happening all over the place. And therefore, we don't know who's who. And therefore, we have to suspect that they're all mamzerim. And therefore, and mamzerim are not allowed to come into the congregation. Therefore, it's banned. And of course, all the rabbis of Israel, Ashkenazim, they put another edict out. Any kara'i that comes to a Jewish court in Eretz Yisrael, we do not allow them to marry. The great rabbi called Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Woldenberg, wrote a whole essay proving that the law is correct, that kara'im have no place in Jewish law. However, there's always a however. Maimonides had his opinion on the kara'im. Maimonides writes this in one of his responses, and I quote, "V'kol zeman shehem yinhagu imanu b'tmimut, as long as they are on good terms with us, v'yasiru mehem ikshut peh v'lazut sefatayim, and they stop disparaging our tradition, and they stop speaking cynically against our way of life, al hakmeh harabbanim, and they stop speaking negatively about the rabbis of the Talmud, v'kol sheken, and all the more so, kishiyishmeru leshonam, when they watch their tongue, milehitlotzitz, from scoffing, and milehaliig, and from deriding, devrei ravotenu, the words of Chazal, bezot yikon lanu, then it'll be fine for us, lechabedam, to respect them, v'lalechet l'shol b'shlomam, to seek their welfare, v'afilu b'tehem, and even to visit them, v'lamul et b'nehem, and will circumcise their children, v'afilu b'shabbat, and will circumcise their children even on Shabbat, which means they're full-fledged Jews. V'likbor metim, and will bury them in our cemeteries, and we will console their mourners. D'dilma nafik minau zer'am me'edya. Who knows? Maybe a good seed will come out of them, and they'll make teshuvah. So Maimonides' opinion was, clearly, that we don't look at kara'im as mamzerim. They're misguided. So as long as you see that they start to change their hashkafah and they start to become a little more accepting to the traditional Jewish way of life, we have to bring them close. In Egypt, as I told you, the kara'im were very prominent, big community. A question came to the great rabbi, Rabbi David ben Zimra, who was the chief rabbi in Egypt, the Radbaz. And the Radbaz, in a classic teshuvah, writes, "I don't believe that the kara'im mamzerim," he says, "for the following reason." He says, "It's true that they follow the laws of marriage, that they give kesef kiddushin, hare'at mekudeshet li. But then," he says, "hold it. Who's the witnesses at those marriages? The witnesses are kara'im themselves. And a kara'i is pasul le'edut. Therefore, their marriages are not marriages. And if their marriages are not marriages, therefore they don't need a divorce. And if they don't need a divorce, so there's no eshet ish. And if there's no eshet ish, there's no mamzerut. And therefore," he says, "there's no problem to marry the kara'im. And the rabbis of Egypt have decided that already." And he says, Maimonides' grandson was known in Egypt in the 1300s that he went and he was mekarev the kara'im and he performed weddings, etc. So here you go again. You know, the Yibum, deja vu again of the Yibum story. Here you have the Ashkenazim that will swear to the end, a kara'i is a mamzer and he's contraband. And the Sephardim come along and say, "Well, they're not so bad, you know, just get them to be a little more accepting to the tradition, and, you know, you could marry them, there's no problem." And the case happens again in Beit Din in Tel Aviv, where a couple comes to the Beit Din, a girl wants to marry a kara'i. Sfaradi girl, Sfaradiya, wants to marry the kara'i, and the rabbi in the Beit Din was an Ashkenaz, and he only knows what he knows. And he knows what the Rama says, he knows what the chief rabbin has decreed, and he says, "Listen, sorry to give you the bad news, but this marriage cannot be done, it's illegal. He's a kara'i, we don't marry kara'im, and have a good day." Chama Vajja, alav shalom, found out about it. And here he goes again. He writes a tremendous long teshuvah in Yabia Omer, and he comes along again and says, "Hold it. We're not telling anybody to change their customs, but don't tell us to change our customs." He says, "According to us, we follow Maimonides." And then he goes on
And this is important to know, Chacham Avadya's view, how he looked at the land of Israel. Not everybody agrees with this. Chacham Avadya's opinion on the status of Israel, he believed that there's a standing tradition in Israel. That anybody that comes to Eretz Yisrael, you're bound to that existing tradition. And what is the existing tradition? The opinion of Rabbi Yosef Karo, who's considered Marad de Atra de Eretz Yisrael. He's the Marad de Atra. And when he was around, the rabbis of Eretz accepted his opinion as binding, and therefore we have a Marad de Atra. And therefore, I mean, it's an extreme opinion. But Chacham Avadya held that, you know, if a convert, let's say, if a convert would come, a goy comes to Israel. He has no tradition. He's a goy. He's not a Sephardi. He's not an Ashkenazi. He has no family. He's a goy. And now he converts. Chacham Avadya says the default tradition of a convert in Eretz Yisrael, you're a Sephardi now. Why? Because you have no tradition. So your tradition has to be the default tradition of Eretz Yisrael. And the default tradition is Shulchan Aruch. He was here first in Sfat 500 years ago. And when he was around, his opinion was prevalent. Therefore, it's a strong opinion. Listen, I have to even tell you how extreme he says it. Again, not everybody agrees. Hazon Ish should not agree with this approach. But Chacham Avadya agreed with it. Now, I will say this. The purpose of this talk is not to come along and say that Ashkenazim have to change their tradition like Shulchan Aruch. We're not going to go that far. But at least leave us alone. Let the Sephardim be Sephardim. That's all the claim is. Chacham Avadya was not trying to convert Ashkenazim. He was just trying to bring us back, like he would say always in his response, Lahzir atara li yoshna, to bring the crown back to its original glory. Of the belief, and he was correct, obviously, that there was an assault against that tradition. And he was very proud of that tradition. And, you know, if you're an Ashkenazi, you don't understand that tradition. Where does it come from, this tradition? You know, you can marry a Karai, are these Sephardim even Jewish? What are they talking about? How can they say so? It's sacrilegious. But they didn't realize that most of the times we were being more strict than them, like in the case of Shechita and in the case of the Mitzvah of Yibum. Nonetheless, he would settle the score when it came to a lot of these things. That his opinion was that if you have a Baal Teshuvah, Chacham Avadya, you have a Baal Teshuvah, he had no tradition. His parents were not religious. So it's not like they have any tradition. And all of a sudden he sees the light, and, you know, he's Hozer B'Teshuvah, and now he wants to know, what am I? Well, what did your father do? My father was Mechalel Shabbat. Oh, clearly that's not the tradition. What did your mother do? Same thing. Oh, she's ochel nevelot utrefot. I have distanced myself from the lech lecha me'artzecha moladetecha me'edbecha. I've left my, the house of Terach. So now, what do? Chacham Avadya's opinion was, welcome, you're a Sephardi. And therefore, he would tell him, the question of the Baal Teshuvah was, can I eat rice on Pesach? It's the million-dollar question. So he says, well, what did your parents do? My parents ate bread on Pesach. Forget about my parents. Leave my parents. The parents have no tradition. Good. So then you're in a default. You're in the default situation. Default situation, you follow Shulchan Aruch. And Shulchan Aruch allows the eating of rice. Now, I must clarify this. Because if you're a Sephardi, eating rice on Pesach is as simple as Modeh Ani. Nobody even questions such a thing. But if you're an Ashkenazi, it's a very odd sounding thing. Rice on Pesach. How could you eat rice on Pesach? I was once introduced at an event in Lawrence, in New York, and it was in a young Israel, and the rabbi, Ashkenaz guy, introduced me. And he said, I'd like to introduce Rabbi Mansour, he's well known, and so on. He comes from the great Sephardic community. And I just have to make one comment. You know, the Sephardic community has come a long way. When I was young, I remember I used to go to the Sephardim on Pesach, and, you know, they were eating rice. But Baruch Hashem, the generation has gotten better. And today, even this rabbi thought that rice is hametz. And he thought that when he sees Sephardim 50 years ago eating rice, that, hey, listen, you know, a bunch of Indians, you know, they don't know what they're doing. And, they eat rice. And so I got up and I said, oh, with all due respect, great rabbi, I'm sure this was a mistalk. You spoke out of line. You know, with all due respect, rice is not one of the five grains. Rice is just as much not a grain like a potato is not a grain. Now, I'm sure Ashkenazim eat potatoes on Pesach. Nobody's going to come along and say, "Whoa, potatoes on Pesach." Even though you make potato flour, it's not a grain. Rice is not a grain. All of you know that. The benacha on rice is mizonot, but what's the final blessing on rice? Borei nefashot. You don't say ala mechya because it's not a grain. So, wow, I never thought about that. Oh, okay. So, in any event, that's a classic case that if you're going to follow Sephardi tradition, rice on Pesach, something, okay, where you run into the issues, where the rabbinate runs into the issues. Now you have a hotel, you have the Waldorf Astoria Hotel in Jerusalem, or you have the Citadel across the street, and they have to kosher their kitchen for Pesach. How do you kosher it now? Is it a rice kitchen or is it a non-rice kitchen? Well, in that case over there, you have to probably follow the stricter opinion to satisfy everyone. Because if it's going to be a rice kitchen, no Ashkenaz is going to walk into the hotel for Pesach. And the Sephardi, he'll sacrifice, not to eat the rice, and he'll have to eat other things. But that's where you run into, challenges of what standard should we run But again, when it comes to this problem they didn't solve. And it's a big problem. And the Chama Vajah had to find it's a long talk, and I'm only giving 45 minutes. I'll finish up with this. We could talk on this subject for 100 years. There's so many good examples of this dilemma that the rabbinate is facing up until today. One dilemma is the following. It's the dilemma of Bishul Yisrael. Let's make it simple. All of us can agree on this, that if a non-Jew takes a piece of meat, opens the barbecue, opens the fire, puts the meat on the fire, and cooks it, that food is called bishul akum. Sfaradim, Ashkenazim, can't eat it, even though it's halak, or glat in your level. So we're not questioning the kosherness of that piece of meat, but the way it was prepared. It's a rabbinical enactment. It's called Bishul Akum. You know that already. So the Ashkenazim have a very simple solution to this. They say, listen, as long as you get the Mashgiach to turn on the barbecue, so that's it. Then let the Akum take over. That already kosher it and takes it out of the realm of Bishul Akum. It's a very simple solution. Comes Maran, Rabbi Yosef Karo, and says, not so simple. He says, I don't care who turns on the fire. That's immaterial to me. Let the Akum turn on the fire. But for me to make it Bishul Yisrael, the Jew has to be involved in the cooking itself. That means the Jew has to put the meat on the fire himself. So, and exactly, if it's scrambled eggs, I was on a Pesach trip now, and in the morning they're serving you scrambled eggs. And the Mashkiachim, all Ashkenazim. And you see the Mashkiach standing behind there, and he's making sure that the pilot doesn't go out because he turned the pilot on. And he's telling everybody, well, don't worry. I turned on the pilot, it's Bishul Yisrael. And of course I come along and I tell the chef, can I have those battered eggs? I said, no. I do it for you. I said, no. You're not allowed to do it for me. If you pour those eggs on, for me that's considered Bishul Akum. Because I was not part of the cooking. The Mashkiach jumped up, but I turned on the oven. I said, I'm Mr. Faradi, with all due respect. I took the eggs, like I always do, and I poured it on the skillet. That's enough to be part of the cooking process. It already cooked partly, and then he could flip it over and so on and so forth. So we have a big disparity in what we consider kosher food being prepared in a hotel. So now you go to a hotel, let's say, even now, forget about Pesach. Go to the Waldorf or go to the Citadel or the King David. The Hashkaha in all those hotels is under the Ashkenazim. The Rabbanut is Ashkenazim. And their standard is the Jew turns on the flame. Now I come to the hotel. Based on my tradition, none of that food is really edible. And we have a dilemma. Hacham Ovadia Alav Hashem, because of this problem, has to find a halachic, you know, way out of it. And he found, you know, different loopholes, although they're not, you know, they're not the best. Clearly the rabbi would prefer to have it, you know, the right way, but these are cases that are called shata dahak. They're excruciating circumstances. Simple example, go to any restaurant, forget about in Israel, in America, Sfaradim are at a big disadvantage. Most of the Hashkaha in America, Hashkaha, OU, here you go, is the OU. Our friends at the OU. I mean, they invited us Sfaradi as a token to be here today. And I accept that, you know, the mascot, the Sfaradi, I have no problem with it. But nonetheless, thank you. But nonetheless, the Hashkaha is Ashkenazi. And I don't have any claims against it. They're following their tradition. So therefore, when they give a Hashkaha, they just tell the Mashkiach, get there first thing in the morning and turn on the ovens. But guess what? What's OU for an Ashkenazi is not OU for a Sephardi, even though all the ingredients are kosher. But their standard is not a standard for a Sephardi. Now, that's a problem in America. So forget about the problems in Israel with Sephardim and Ashkenazim. A lot of those problems we have over here, and nobody would realize that. Now, what should we do? Get our own restaurants, get our own Hashkaha. It's not so simple. Obviously, it's very costly. But again, the moral of the story is that it changed. That over the years, those that were trying to unify it, with good intention, of course, with good intention, there was a big pushback. Today, thank God, the Sephardim have their own slaughterhouses where they can make their meat not glat, but halak. The Sephardim have their own bedin that performs marriages that are legal in their circles. They perform the yibum. Karaim is not so common, but if it came up, it would be okay. They have their own bedin to perform divorce documents. You know, the way we write words, we spell names, Ashkenazim spell them differently. What's a name? Ashkenazim always put ayins in the middle of the names, where we don't. We put an aleph or we leave it silent. Chabavadya says he used to walk the yeshiva when he was young and he used to pass a store on Rehov Yafo. And the store's name was a shoe store. The name of the store was Berbish. Berbish, that was the guy's name. He used to sell shoes, Berbish. But Chabavadya, being a Sfaradi, he's looking at the store and it's spelled Bet Ayin Resh Bet Aleph Shin. So he's reading it every morning, Ba'ar Ba'esh. And he said, who would name a store Ba'ar Ba'esh, burnt in a fire? And he says, P.S., the store burnt down eventually. So who knows, Al Tiftach Peh LaSatan. But the point is, you know, it's comical when it comes to Berbish, the shoemaker or the shoe salesman. But guess what? If Berbish comes to get a get, well, he spells it one way if he's Ashkenazi, and if he's a Sephardi, it's spelled a different way. And in Gittin, the spelling makes a difference. If you spell the name wrong, you spell the city wrong, so then the get is pasul. So you can't just make one unified law and say, well, we're going to write the names like this. But Shulchan Aruch says if you write the name wrong, the get is not a get, and then you have Eshet Ish, and then you have real Mamzerim. In the beginning, that's what they wanted to do. But Baruch Hashem, there was pushback from rabbis like Chacham Avadia. You had to say, listen, it's okay to have two customs. We'll try to keep everybody peaceful and united. But Frank was a supporter of Chacham Avadia's opinion. And today, you have two Bet Dinim. If you're a Sephardi, you go to the Sephardic scribe and he writes your get. And if you're an Ashkenazi, you go to the Ashkenazi. And Baruch Hashem, it works out. The lesson over here is that, like the Rama said, like I started today's talk, V'chena minhag, that's the minhag, V'en l'shanot, and don't change it. Thank you very much.